I believe we have Dr. Future and Mrs. Future somewhere in the house.
You believe correctly.
Well, we've got 1 minute to learn everything there is to know about today's program.
DIY, my friend. DIY. Not DUI. DIY.
DIY is?
Do it yourself. It's the Bay Area's week of DIY. There's a huge festival going on in San Mateo this weekend, and it's the Maker Fair, where anybody who's into making stuff comes to learn about what they want to make and people doing cool things. And in the Bay Area, they're using all the latest tools and all the funnest toys to make anything you can imagine. There's a whole area on the 3D printers, for example, on creating 3D objects out of ideas.
I like that. Anything else going on? Because you got 20 seconds.
Yeah, Gaddafi's using a new kind of weapon. I'm going to be talking about that.
No, what is that?
Well, you have to listen.
Stay tuned.
Okay, good tease. Have a great show.
All right, you too.
Thanks, Corey.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bet won't see that in San Mateo.
Time now for What's Left and Dr. Future on KSCO Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. A cloudy, stormy day here in Santa Cruz. Kind of invigorating, though. You know, you feel like you're in New Zealand or something.
New Zealand.
How are you doing, Sunny?
They call it brisk, and I love it. I feel very energized in weather like this.
Yeah, we've been staying on the ocean this week and watching the waves. They're big, very big in Santa Cruz today.
A lot of ionization, I guess.
Yes, Sage and Nada, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Future, Mrs. Future.
Can't wait to hear about your adventure this weekend.
I had quite the adventure this weekend.
Yeah, that sounds like quite an adventure.
Yeah, that's a little...
Give our audience a little taste.
Okay, we can get into it a little bit here. So you actually went down to L.A.
I went to L.A. I went for a class on Saturday.
Something about iPhones?
And the class was called iPhone Artistry.
iPhone Artistry.
It was given by a photographer. His name is Dan Burkholder. Yeah. And Dan went through the processes of taking a picture with your iPhone and putting it through as many apps as you need.
You mean like Photoshop-type apps for the iPhone?
Quite a bit. Yeah, Photoshop isn't on the iPhone right now, but there are many apps that are very similar to it.
I have my favorites.
I do, too. I'm a big fan of Sketchpad. I can't imagine they left that out. Did you use Sketchpad?
No, we didn't use Sketchpad.
Photogene? Try Photogene?
We did Photogene. He
I love that.
Gave
Photogene.
Us a number, I'd really say cool. 20, 30 different phone apps, and he went through them and explained how to get the effects that he does with his paintings photography.
And I gather he's got some pretty amazing results.
Huh? He has some incredible results where he's taking the photo and then using all these post processes. Yeah. Where something like you have apps called like Hipstomatic, which add a border and
I played with that too.
That's a fun one.
It takes your state-of-the-art 720p movies and turn them into a 70s 8mm film type. Is one preset, another was a 50s movie.
Right. Well, I think you're talking about 8mm, which is a phone app for video.
Oh, that's right. Hipstomatic is for stills, right?
And
You are right. Putting the
processes on the photo as it's happening. So you don't get to control it as much as what... Huh. This was for artists. This was for photographic educators. And so it was a packed class in Hollywood on the seedy side of Hollywood, which I don't think you can get much seedier than the seedy side of Hollywood.
Really? A state-of-the-art iPhone apps photography class in the seedy part of Hollywood?
It was in a photography store that has supplies that continues to have the chemicals for people that are still doing analog photosynthesis with the processes as well as digital artists. And obviously, since they're putting on a class such as iPhone Artistry, which could be completely digital, where you would never need. But what Dan was doing was actually putting on these different, doing his photographic artwork completely on the iPhone. And then not using the iPad, and then doing like a, where you can make a digital negative and then do a regular photographic process with the chemicals. He also does a lot with gold leaf and just incredible. Sometimes using a digital printer and sometimes using the traditional photographic process.
Awesome.
And
What's the best website to look at some of this? I like that.
DanBurkholder.com is his homepage. It's DanBurkholder.com. And you can see the various pictures that he does
with his iPhone.
Like that first picture that you see right away, which is spectacular landscape.
Was done on his iPhone.
I mean,
these look like classic high-end photography.
Exactly, pictures. That he does completely.
Even Currier and Ives type engraving looks.
Now, he did talk about the iPad, and unfortunately the iPad 2 does not have the camera that the iPhone 4 does, or even the iPhone 3 GS.
But still, it's 720p.
The still is not as high res as the iPhone 4 really takes the better picture. And then, of course, he explained workflow. What if you have a picture? It's a lot easier to do stuff on the iPad because it's bigger. So take the picture with the iPhone 4 and then get it into your iPad. And how do you do that in the field without internet? He went through all of this. It was an all-day class, and I felt packed. I felt my head get bigger as the day went on. It was just getting stuffed and stuffed and stuffed full.
So are you convinced? Is this the way to go, or mobile machines?
This is the future. And then the exciting part, the adventure of getting to the adventure, the class.
Oh, yes, that's right. It was the journey is the reward in this case.
The journey was the reward.
How Agent Nautic got to L.A., to the seedy part of Hollywood, to take this iPhone artistry class.
Santa Cruz, I am very happy.
I say better seedy Hollywood than Chatsworth. Anyway, so tell us about your journey on the bus down.
I took the bus. Uh-huh. I took the bus from San Jose to Orange County, which is where my sister lives. I went on a tour bus called U.S. Asia.
U.S. Asia.
You mean U.S. Asia.
So there's a bus line that's specialized for Asian transport.
It's, from right.
The Bay Area to L.A.?
Right, right.
Well, what makes it Asian? Does it have certain capabilities? Or,
it's
or
the name
features?
Of the company is U.S. Asia.
Asian Films?
U.S. Asia Bus. And it goes from Los Angeles, San Francisco, Las Vegas. It was $80 round trip ticket.
And the strange attractor for this?
The price tag.
The price tag, $80. And that's round trip, so $40. You don't have to do a round trip.
Cheaper than gas.
$40, cheaper than gas. Well, as I was saying earlier, I saw a gas station in L.A. that had gas at $4.99 a gallon. As I was riding on the bus, it was very nice.
Well, what I hate about buses is that I have to depend on my 3G, and it goes out all the time.
Well, these buses are spectacular. They have bathrooms. They're very clean. There was air circulating, air conditioning, screens for videos. So they played videos during the –
But how about access to your computer?
And they had free Wi-Fi. On the bus, also electrical plugs for your
power and bandwidth.
Power and
bathrooms
bandwidth.
Did you say food too?
And
really raises the bar for Greyhound.
This isn't just a bus.
And they hand out sandwiches at the beginning of the bus. There was this whole like little ritual where they went around, they gave everybody, they even had choices between the Vietnamese sandwiches that you wanted or a dessert.
The bus travel, nice
and
food.
And then they gave you napkins and water bottles, and then they gave you little bags, little trash bags, so you could put your stuff right there on your hang it on your seat back.
And all for $80.
All for $80 round trip.
There you go.
6 hours.
Not everything is becoming unaffordable.
No,
there
are this
still
was
some deals.
It was tremendous because I was highly productive both Friday on my way down there and Sunday on my way back. I worked the whole way.
Did you talk to anybody on the?
I did. Would you know me not to talk?
No, I would imagine.
Dr. Feature. I got to sit with two very nice young Asian gentlemen, different ones. The one on the way down was a Army soldier. He just came back from Iraq, where he was deployed for a year and built bridges.
Oh, well, you have a common interest there.
Oh, yeah. So we got to talk about building bridges the whole way down. Oh, look at that bridge. Hey, look at that excavator. Did you have that in Iraq? And it was fascinating because he told me about how they're building the bridges and with these modular pieces, and that he himself had overseen the building of 500-meter bridge in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting because it reminds me of another story of a new TV series called American Inspector. where they go around. It's like a reality show where they go around and inspect bridges and say, ah, look at this. This is laughable.
Well, as you know, Dr. Future, I was also an inspector.
I know. So I can see you getting excited about that.
It was so much fun. I had such a good time. And they stopped.
And with internet connection, you could look up the bridges and get the background information.
Oh, we even like exchanged emails.
Situational awareness intact. That's funny.
And yeah, they gave us food, and we had one break. We stopped halfway in Button Willow.
Button Willow.
Button Willow on 5 and hung out, and I highly recommend it.
What's the name of the bus line?
U.S. Asia, and they start in San Francisco at the Chinatown, and they go stop in San Jose in front of a Vietnamese sandwich shop, and then they stop at the Chinatown in L.A., and then they stopped in Rosemead, and then I got off in Westminster, which is in Orange County.
Oh, cool. So they have these local stops along the different Asian communities.
It ended up happening. At first, I didn't know. I could have assumed it was Vietnamese because we were in front of a Vietnamese sandwich shop and a market in San Jose. But I did ask my first car partner, seat partner, and he said they were Vietnamese. So I also got to learn Vietnamese a bit.
Oh, really?
How to say thank you. And
oh, cool.
You know, because they're passing out food.
And Vietnamese food.
So how did you say thank you?
Oh, Mrs. Future, don't put me on the spot like that.
Oh, you just learned
quickly,
it for a moment.
Quickly, double
efficient. We don't want our Vietnamese callers calling in to correct us, huh?
Anyway, I think it's an interesting story. It shows you more service for transport, and the journey becomes much more pleasurable that way. And I think we're into that, especially these days where everything's being cut back and airlines are cutting down on the amenities.
The group deal.
Luxury bus rides with bandwidth and power and food.
Yeah, it was tremendous. And you can stand up and stretch your legs.
Essential primal necessities of life. Yeah, stressing.
Stretching your body.
So quality at a bargain price is still available in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did pass the Greyhound.
You did.
We all looked at him like, ha, I don't know why I felt more superior to it, but it was a really nice ride.
Nice.
Very smooth.
Good to know.
Yeah, definitely. And the iPhone artistry was tremendous. Tremendous class.
That sounds really interesting, especially when you can look at the preponderance of apps coming out for doing computational photography on your iPhone and Androids and other smartphones. And who's comparing them? Who's really looking at what's good and what's not?
Dan Burkholder.
That's great to know.
And he was showing us which ones have a histogram, which ones have the curves where you can adjust your colors. It's just incredible.
Well, let's download some now.
I was going to say the Twitter feed at Dr. Future Show does have the danburkholder.com link for people who want to click on it. You can also check out what we're doing at drfutureshow.com directly. And you can surf along with us as we explore the internet with the radio.
Yes, that's our experiment in combining the web with AM talk radio.
So yeah.
If you want to be part of that experiment and give us some feedback on it, we'd love it.
Yeah, yeah. Come in and chat.
You'll be a pioneer.
So, Dr. Fritcher, what are we going to be talking about?
I want to talk about some of this new technology, this 3D printer technology. There's a new breakthrough there where it's affordable.
Oh.
You can actually have one at home.
Stay tuned.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. There's a real big breakthrough in 3D art for all. It's a new type of printer, not like the printers that we use now, the dot matrix that just do paper, but stuff that prints using plastic. Yes, plastics was the future, at least in this case. And there are machines out now that use plastic to create three-dimensional art. We've talked about it before in other shows.
And also, Dr. Future, just plastics. We've talked about other materials.
That's right. It's evolved to the point where you can print organs, even human organs. But what's getting affordable for us, for those of us that like to buy our stuff at Fry's or over Amazon.com, this has still been kind of expensive. There's a few people that would afford the more expensive ones, like Jay Leno has one for his car garage, where he also combined with a 3D scanner, he's able to make spare parts for some of his 100-plus automobiles. I believe there's a YouTube video online that shows Jay scanning a part for his Stanley steamer, and making a replacement park using the 3D printer.
I tell you, this is such a great idea that you can think of plastic as just silly putty for anything, right? Uh-huh. And maybe ultimately they'll be able to figure out how to recycle all the plastic into parts, you know, so that people can use it as a tool instead of having everything turn into trash.
So how much is this going to cost, this 3D printer, Dr. Future? How is this affordable?
Oh, you go right to the bottom line.
Yeah.
Huh? Don't you want to know how much the accessories cost?
Well, I'm one of those people who doesn't want to pay for an app, and 99 All cents right. is like a All right. I have to swallow.
You're right. Most people are more product and service based anyway. So just, you know, don't make something for me. Just give me the printer. All right. Here it is. It's called the MakerBot.
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 Nice.
MakerBot. And, well, 3D printing has existed for years, but until now they've been pretty cumbersome and expensive. And anyway, now the MakerBot tops out at about
$1,300.
Yeah, so it gives anybody with a computer and an idea the creative horsepower to make something in 3D.
Oh, it's so cool. And that, what I love about this article is, again, there's a picture of the 3D printer to show us what it looks like. And it's a pretty good picture, I think. And it shows it making something in the middle of it.
You know, what's interesting also is that, like, as they get more sophisticated, the way that they make things, it's not like 19th century thinking of, like, say, you just take a Swiss watch. Instead of creating separate little gears and then pushing them all together to create the watch, the metal 3D printers, the ones a little bit in the future, will just print the entire watch. And with all the gears intact, working, they don't need to be assembled. There's no assembly with the 3D printers because they assemble each line in 3D space one molecule at a time. That's like building bricks. You know, they assemble them from the base up. So if you know where the gears are, you don't have to put them in place. You just know where they are in 3D space, and you can just make them.
That boggles my head a little bit.
Yeah, it's a different way of thinking.
It is. It's a complete paradigm shift.
Yeah, but if you can imagine how a printer works in 2D, just imagine it in 3D. And that's the simplest way I can imagine. If any of you have better metaphors out there to explain to our audience, please feel free to call and share them with us.
That's right, at 479-1080.
I know Phil knows about this stuff, but you know, I don't know if he's listening today.
Are you calling out Phil?
I'm just saying, he might know.
Just saying.
Yeah. Phil's a local, Renaissance mind that's been creating the security for these systems.
MakerBot. And this article was straight out of the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Is it today's? New York Times Art and Design.
Yeah. You know, anyway, we have that up on the website. It's also the Kurzweil AI website. One of our favorite sources for news.
Yeah, and it looks like the article talks about some interesting things happening in Brooklyn Arts and Design Collective, which will host a make-a-thon.
Oh, the make-a-thon, yeah.
Make-a-thon. Yeah.
That's the sign of when things begin to take off, like in the computer industry with people who get together with their machines and jam. Now it's happening with the 3D printers. So tell us about the make-a-thon, son.
Oh, well, I don't really know too much about it except that it's an event where people who are interested in working with the tools, these 3D printers, can get together and play with the bots, receive miniature 3D busts of themselves, and, you know, they're just a chance for artists to get together in Brooklyn and play with it. And, you know, it's just part of this 3D printer article. So, you know, I just think we're going to have our own maker fair this weekend. And so it's just, you know, it caught my attention because I'm very interested and it's popping up all over.
And the maker fair, in the next hour, we will be bringing on a person who's helping to organize the maker fair this year. And you'll hear firsthand what to expect at the Maker Fair this year.
I love the Maker Fair, and I love Maker Magazine.
Yeah.
Just
Make.
Say that.
Make Magazine.
Thank you, Make.
Yes. Yeah, me too. It's crafts.
You
want me to tell
DIY.
You about it?
Yeah.
Make Magazine is just about 3 years old, I think, and they have really been have taken off because they're just so interesting. They have do-it-yourself articles about how to make your own technology, how to make it. So it's crafts fair for the highly technical, you know, and I'd say it's kind of our generation's popular mechanics.
Mm-hmm. You know? Except the stuff that you can do yourself. Right. It's all there are people that have used hot air balloons to send cameras up into the upper atmosphere and get their pictures back from those cameras. You know, stuff you can do at home these days is amazing. You're really
it's really exciting. Starts this Saturday and Sunday. But one more thing, Dr. Future, yes. that I think is interesting about the MakerBots
yes.
is that this I think that this process, this new technology, and the people that are really attracted to it, and mm-hmm. as it's mentioned in this article, is the really open source oriented, and that the programming that goes into making these figures out of the printing is open source. And we've talked about this very problem in the past where somebody is like, hey, I made this piece of artwork, and now somebody else just threw up the code online about how they can make it.
Yeah, this is the Penrose 3D Penrose tile story.
That's right. And mm-hmm. so I think that it's along with that paradigm shift of how we're building things in the future, mm-hmm. it's also how we're sharing them. Because basically with these 3D printers, I could just look at something, think about it, do a little SketchUp in my mind and online, you know, SketchUp, Google free animation, 3D sketching program, mm-hmm. and bing a bang a boom, I got myself the physical say. Representation of that.
Well, I like the idea that creativity is always naturally open source, because people who are engaged in using their imagination and in designing something from their own original thinking are not worried about who's copying them, who's taking it and running with it, who's making a profit off of it without including them. It's like that whole law about private property is the whole different realm than the actual creativity and the creative process.
Well, yeah, and I think that's important to remember, because the real joy, the real joie de vie of life is the creative process, not the stuff necessarily that you make from it, even though that can be fun too, but the process of doing it together.
Well, I think this could be a really interesting conversation with some intellectual property people, the experts.
Well, as Terrence McKenna would
changing.
Say, you know, it's the felt presence of the moment that's important. And if we start having toys that can just, like the 3D printers, that can make anything out of molecules ultimately as easily as we can create thoughts, then what are we going to do with this stuff? What's valuable at that point, you know, if you can make stuff so easily?
Right. And then there's also the idea that all of our ideas yeah. are continuation of other ideas and that have been built up over the last 10,000
yeah,
years
everything.
Of human civilization.
Right. That's right. There's an artist from Stanford yeah. that's talking about how all things are extracted from what's before. All things are copied from the past.
Yes.
All things are.
You're thinking of Nina?
Nina Palin?
I wanted to say Palin. Yeah, Nina Palin, and she is I think it must be an After Effects artist, but she made a feature film that I just love.
That you put out for free
called
on YouTube.
Sita Sings the Blues.
Oh, yeah. I know that movie.
And it's the
I know.
Poster child movie for the Creative Commons license, which is a license where you share and share alike, and you can pay in recognition of the artist to support the artist, and then you get a special recognition back. But the copyright restriction is actually that you may share it at will. You may even sell it at will as long as you share and share alike, meaning you don't put any restrictions on it yourself.
And it's Nina Paley, P-A-L-Y, P-A-L-E-Y, excuse me. And it's Sita Sings the Blues. And you could just put that in, SitaSingsTheBlues.com.
And I remember what he said. She said that all art is derivative.
Yes, and she made an absolutely incredible YouTube video called All Art is Derivative that is just mind-blowing. And she, I think she was at a museum in New York. I'm not looking at it right now, so I don't want to say the wrong one. But she basically did an amazing photo shoot of a lot of classic statues from the antiquities
and paintings.
Oh, that's
incredible. Just search for All Art is Derivative on Google, and the movie will come up right away. It's a two-minute movie.
And so you were saying, Mrs. Future, she took pictures of a lot of classical sculpture and
yes.
then what mashed it together?
And she made them dance. She just showed you how copying was going on all levels throughout the ages. It was going on in sculpture. It was going on in painting. And it was homage. You know, people in later generations were imitating the great virtuosos of the past. But the new art recognized the original but did something new with it. And
update.
That spirit needs to be recognized as well. It's not just the artist who owns their own work, but artists have been inspired by what went before them.
Update. It's not all art is derivative. It's all creative work is derivative. All creative work. It sounds to me like that includes art.
Yeah, right. And do we have a link for that?
All creative work is derivative. Just search for that.
On YouTube. That's
yeah.
a YouTube.
And I'll put it up on our Cinecast
okay.
link here.
All right. So.
Okay. So that's, you know, that's the thing, is that we are moving towards where open source as a philosophy of creation will be most relevant. And that's where we have machines that can manipulate molecules as easily as this, because it makes the form less important. Right now it's expensive to create stuff. So, you know, forms have extreme value. That's why we like products better than services. But in the near future, these type of technology will make form trivial and not where the true value of life lies. And that's a huge shift in consciousness that lots of people get. I'd say several million probably currently understand that and live their lives that way. And more will do so as this technology makes it apparent. Anyway, that's interesting. In the meantime, we have other new do-it-yourself gadgets, like an iris recognition gadget that eliminates passwords. You can put it on your computer, and you can just look at your machine, and it will say, oh, that's not a...
I love this
you like that
iris
idea?
Recognition gadget.
Yeah, why should the NSA have all the fun?
It's called iLock, E-Y-E-L-O-C-K.
You like that idea. Instead
designed
of,
by Hoyos Group, H-O-Y-O-S Group. And this article came out of CNET. I would like to see this everywhere. So I, having the key problems that I do, which I believe is a genetic thing.
Well, gee, what if you're blind? You don't have an eyeball to what you know. What do you have
Even
to?
Even blind people have eyeballs.
They'd have to look in the right place.
I mean, what are the percentage of people that don't have eyes?
Okay. Well, I suppose you could always have the fingerprint as a backup.
So, yeah, I could see this being
voice
at the front door, just, you know, blink at the eye lock, and it lets you in.
Well, what is this? This is not a new concept. What's new is that it's cheap and readily available for your as a USB plug-in.
Big as a thumb drive.
Yeah, right. Eye lock. Yeah, forget passwords. I think people are sick of passwords anyway, to tell you the truth. And what kind of makes sense with iris scanners is that it is biological, and our species is, you know, likes biology and will use biological processes to organize itself better. So it kind of makes sense along those lines.
I think it's also important to note, Dr. Future,
yes.
That the device will not work if you're dead. And even,
really, you can't.
You can't steal.
How many movies
person?
Have I seen like this?
That's right.
Knock someone off and take their eyeball, like in some of those gross movies.
That's right. This is the science.
Why not? What happens is
the iris flattens at death. Even though it can still work on another person, it will not be the same, and you will have to create a new iris recognition.
I see. So you like this because you will be liberated from having to memorize all those passwords?
Passwords, keys. I can see this on cars. I can see this everywhere.
I already see ways past this, though. I mean, by itself. I mean, like if...
They're saying that it is hacker-proof.
No, I mean, I'm talking physical. Look, just think simple situation. We've seen it a zillion times in the movies. Somebody being held hostage. Right, and the bad guy's behind the hostage with a gun to her head, and he says, "Look in the scanner," and if she doesn't, she's dead. Well, what do you think she's gonna do? you know, look in the scanner, right? Uh-huh. I mean, they'd have to have a way in the scanner to read her mind to tell her that she's in trouble. You know, that would be a breakthrough. But this is still trivial.
You don't have to go there. No, it doesn't have to be nefarious.
I think it's good to cover this. I think it's really amazing that you're so much in favor of this highly strange technology.
You know, I mean, I'm getting for the first time to appreciate the iris scanner security for personal use.
You can't lose it.
It seems so suspect.
You can't forget it.
That's true.
It goes
wherever you go.
All you got to do is blink at it. Blink at the little sensor.
And access is yours.
But doesn't this usher in the surveillance state?
What if you died and you're trying to access your files from the other side?
Well, you know, that's why you got to have some backup with other real people, other live people.
I see, some other connection. Okay. Right. And Sun did break up another important story, the NSA and the big changes that have been going on.
Yeah, the people who made iris scanning famous.
We have a commercial first?
No, yeah, we should do a commercial, but I just wanted to say that they are going for $99.
Oh, the scanners.
The scanners, the iLock. Uh-huh. So honestly, I can see this everywhere. I mean,
so you like it better than kid-proofing your computer, say?
Right.
Well, I'm
looking at it being at the front door.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's going to be built into the camera before long if it takes off.
So for $99, you can have everybody in your household have their own unique iris fingerprint or eye print.
But you've got to think that, you know, that data could be collected. Right? I mean, your eye scans will be part of a huge database.
It could be faked.
I mean, you were just talking about people, like, forcing other people to eyeball a sensor. You could just steal somebody's key now.
Yeah, it's just another level of direct connection with you that where you can be implicated and stuff. Probably every email would be marked with your eye scan to verify its authenticity. There'll be an authenticity test on the net, which will incorporate these technologies.
You know, I really have to believe, that the effectiveness of this technology is limited because there are so many devices now that are sending a ray out to measure the surface, so your iris isn't going to be secure forever.
Yeah, you're going to combine it with other things.
All right, well, let's stay tuned for after our break. Right. Dr. Future Show.
It's time to dine in a redwood paradise. Take the short drive through the woods to the beautiful San Lorenzo Valley, where the trees are tall, the sky blue, the pace slow, and the dining is pure enjoyment.
Hi, it's Rosemary. You know, for years I've been going to Spanky's in downtown Ben Lomond. Warm, friendly, everything that you could want in your own downtown diner. The staff have been there for years. They always recognize you. Most people think of a diner and they think of prepackaged, pre-made food. Not so in Spanky's. How do I know this? Not only do I go there and eat on a regular basis, but I have seen them make homemade stews, homemade soups. They make their own salad dressing. A fabulous hollandaise for their wonderful eggs Benny. And let me tell you, one of the things you should try, the best homemade chicken fried steak you will find anywhere, believe me. I love the place, I love the food, I highly recommend it, and tell them that Rosie said hi.
Dine in a redwood paradise. Take the short drive to San Lorenzo Valley and enjoy.
All right, everybody, listen up. VitaminGoddess.com. That's right. VitaminGoddess.com or VitaminGod.com. What are you laughing at? Come on. You've heard me for years proclaim the advantages of getting all your essential supplements, vitamins, and minerals. But of course, where else? VitaminGoddess.com. You can remember that. VitaminGoddess.com. VitaminGoddess.com. Come on. Or VitaminGod.com. Why? Because it seems like everybody and their monkey's uncle is on the internet. So why not you? And if you are, check it out. Go see a beautiful website and a beautiful way to get all your supplements. VitaminGoddess.com or VitaminGod.com. And remember, may you live long and prosper.
Jet engines, car horns, leaf blowers. Today's world puts our sense of hearing on overload. Luckily, there are places we can go to refocus our senses.
our national wildlife refuges. It's amazing how much more you'll hear when you just take a minute to listen. Like a stirring chorus of songbirds warbling in the treetops. Or the industrious beaver slapping its tail in the mountain pond over baritone bullfrogs. Or the pulsating beat of a pileated woodpecker looking for a meal. When you hear these things, you're hearing the world the way we found it. With over 500 refuges across America, you don't have to go far to make a special connection with nature. Learn more at fws.gov/refuges. That's fws.gov/refuges.
Hey, kids, what time is it? That's right, it's happy hour. Hi, I'm Charlie Friedman, inviting you to our afternoon get-togethers here on KSCO. Join me weekdays at 4 here on your favorite radio station for 3 hours of news, traffic, weather, news talk, and a few great 78s from my vast collection. So, listen to Happy Hour on KSCO. Learn why they call me the genial genius of Watsonville. Happy Hour, 4 to 7 weekdays on KSCO.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. I wanted to mention also that if you're into brainstorming new ideas for health, there is a competition out there. You know, the XPRIZE people, the XPRIZE Foundation and Qualcomm have joined together to create a competition to get this, to create a real tricorder. You know, some state-of-the-art medical device.
So I'd like one of those.
What
$10
is a tricorder?
Dollars. Well, for
Did
Star Trek
Did you not
fans,
watch Star Trek?
Yeah, didn't you watch that? Dr. McCoy carries this little gadget around with him that gives him all kinds of information about what's happening in the patient before him. And it cannot just be the patient. It can be the tricorder can be used for looking at the environment. I'm thinking a popular use for it in Star Trek was where they would land on a strange planet and they'd walk around and turn their tricorders on first thing, and they'd be able to detect life forms approaching them from behind hidden walls or hidden dimensions. You know, they would just be there. The tricorder would make the invisible visible. And that's one of the great sci-fi uses for the tricorder.
It had great sound effects, too.
Yeah, exactly. You all know it.
Well, when we had when we watched Will Wright speak about the future of games, he talked about wanting his tricorder.
Yeah. And today, of course, it's a lot more sophisticated than they imagined in sci-fi scripts in the 60s. Today they could pick, a real tricorder could do things like pick up your heartbeat from a distance, could pick up your stress levels, could determine what kind of pheromones you're releasing, your heat signature, LIDAR, radar reflections.
What, could your heart?
Yeah, broadcast heart. Your health conditions.
Yeah, and hardly any of these ideas have truly been implemented to any great extent, except maybe a little bit in the biofeedback arena and some heart monitoring. Like I think your mother, Janata, had a heart monitor system.
That's
right.
My mom had a heart monitor on for a month because they wanted to see how her heart, how it worked over a long period of time.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many stories you hear from people saying they have heart problems and then they go in for the test and they're fine. And then as soon as they're not under the conditions of the test, their heart,
I think what they're finding is the heart, like the blood pressure, your blood pressure is not constant. It's changing all the time. It's adapting to both internal and external stimuli. The environment affects what your heart and blood pressures are, as well as other things like brain waves and what you're thinking and and on and on. It's a very dynamical system, life. So our feedback tricorders of today are tracking this multidimensional nature of reality and existence, especially life signals that indicate who we are and where we are and what's going on right now.
So tell us about Tricorder XPRIZE.
Anyway, the XPRIZE people are the ones that have given money for the groups that go to space first. I think the ability to go up into orbit or even just to get out of the atmosphere and then back again, they had a $10 million prize for that. This one is about creating a gadget that can enhance integrated digital health. And
it's a $10 million
prize. It's a grand challenge, $10 million.
And when's it due?
I think it's next month.
They're launching the competition now, in early 2012 is what they say.
Oh, they're launching it.
Yes. So we get to start brainstorming.
Yes. Okay, you already see more up on that than me on the details.
Boy, this seems like a Tesla society.
Yeah, they want to incentivize consumer empowerment in healthcare. So I'm thinking that what might be fun for our KSEO audience is that if you can imagine an ultimate medical device that would make your medical experience easier and more fun, why don't you give us a call and maybe we'll be able to make it real. Maybe we'll be able to introduce a tricorder XPRIZE idea from KSEO land that would be funny if it won.
Yeah, Dr. Future, I think it's funny how you introduced it to me today by saying, I found a contest that we could win.
Yeah. And if we win, I'd throw a $10 million party for KSL listeners.
You'd spend it all on a party?
Yeah. Well, a party that would teach you things, too. I mean, it wouldn't just be a frivolous party.
Right. A party that would end up with like a tech shop that has all the fancy.
It would have sustainability.
I want a 3D printer, too.
Yeah. It would enhance your experience of media.
Oh, maybe the tricorder would be made with the 3D printer.
I think so. I mean, ultimately. Now, I think we'd be able to make the computers with the 3D printers.
Isn't Qualcomm the company that organizes, that reads medical tests, right? Don't you send a lot of tests?
No, I think they invented cell phones, some cell phones, the CDMA chip.
Yeah, they're you know, the ones telephone
that companies. Verizon is a CDMA company. They're based on that. The iPhone 4 has a Verizon mode that's CDMA.
So, I see. So they're looking for a device. Huh? They want a medical analysis device that people will use with their phones.
They're deeply into the mobile computing platform. They're a major player in that world. And
well, some would say your smartphone is turning into the tricorder. That's what Will Wright was saying.
Yeah. Well, this smartphone will be our connection with the world. You know, in many ways, it'll be our computer. But what does that mean? It's not just doing email at this point.
It's collecting the data.
Yeah, it's aware of your body. It's aware of your consciousness. It's interfacing. It's an interface between you and the world around you in multiple dimensions. As we see already with 20 years now into the net, look at how complex it is already. That's nothing.
Well, and it seems to me in one of your previous shows, you had an iPad device that was being adopted by I guess it was like a radiation board that was storing a massive database of high-resolution radiation scans, like patient information, mm-hmm. and allowing doctor members to be able to get a fast download of the information that they could use for diagnosis.
Well, there was that one, and then last week we had that Kickstarter contest where
the crowdsourcing of radiation
of
detectors,
the radiation levels, particularly in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to know what's going on from Fukushima. Well, we just create a plan where we have thousands of sensors picking up actual radiation in our neighborhoods, in our area, wherever we are. Crowdsource the devices. And then have their aggregation of all this information on a website so we can see it. That's what's happening. So we'll actually know real information. It won't be a secret. It won't be controlled. It'll be open source. Because you know why it's open source? Because we all care. Because we all want to know. And when that happens, it's open source. So
yay, open source and crowd.
So $10 million. Any great ideas for that? Check our either keep it if you want to keep it yourself and have your own entrance out there. Go for it, man. Go for it. But if you want to be part of our crowdsourced XPRIZE entry, give us a call.
XPRIZE Foundation.
Yeah, $10 million. And I suppose I might be open to other ideas than $10 million party for this. you have to really convince me that I can't think of a higher use for the ultimate medical device than to be a truly interactive environment where we truly enjoy ourselves and each other.
Well, I suppose if we're going to go for it, we should maybe make use of one of these other links put up for us today about a virtual view beneath the skin. Like probably our tricorder should be able to do something like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. That is a major medical breakthrough. It's a new way of using ultra-thin endoscopes to look inside our organs. And the most easiest organ and one of the most important organs to do that is not even an organ. It's the bladder.
The bladder's not an organ? Yes, it is.
You think it is?
Yes, it is.
Bladder is an organ?
Yes, it is.
I guess you're right. Yeah. Okay, well, it's one of the simpler organs then. It's like, is Pluto a planet? Is a bladder an organ? I'm sure it's somewhere. Excuse my ignorance on this,
okay.
But I guess I haven't had to deal with this issue yet, or hopefully not at all. But apparently one in four men get bladder cancer. And it would be really great to be able to scan the bladder quickly and easily to see where any potential tumors are at. And that's one of our other articles that we have up now, is a new thin endoscope design that allows us to basically have a Google Earth view of the bladder. You can travel through the various layers, the endothelial layers, the skin of the bladder, and look closely for any abnormalities. And anyway, that technology is now starting to come online.
So a 3D picture of your organs.
Yeah, yeah. From
like a Google, like what we're used to looking in Google Maps, Google Earth, we will be able to do Google body parts.
Okay, a virtual view.
Are we looking at this device called this is Anat-on-Me. Anatomy. A gnat on me.
A knot might be a knot.
Now, there's also another one in Technology Review, another article
about
a device that projects anatomical images.
That's kind of cool. I like that one, too. That's a Pico projector. Let's say you broke your arm. Instead of having to look at an x-ray of it, you hold up your arm, and your arm becomes visible with your broken bone. You can see the bone in real time. Sort of like those old X-ray machines where you remember back in the 20s and 30s, they'd stick your hand in front of it, you'd see the live skeleton as you moved, and they found out that was dangerous. Well, now you can do that sort of thing, and it's not dangerous. But instead of looking at a screen, it projects the image right on your hand, so you can see your hand in real time with the bones.
But this is a projection.
This is not literally
any kind of image of your hand.
It is your bones. It's your live bones.
Well,
initially, it's pictures.
The anatomy. But it's a generalized picture. It's not your personal bones.
Well, I'm saying that the virtual view of general bones is a training concept, but it's obviously heading to the point where your body incorporates the live experience. You know, the media reflects the real-time movie.
And they're hoping this will help people stick to their physical therapy regimes, because that's a big problem.
Yeah, if you really see what's going wrong with you firsthand, then you're more likely to follow your physiotherapy, because you're right, Nada, that's a big issue. People are not following their therapies very well, and the therapists are at wit's end to know what to do about that.
Yeah, and they say that that's up to between 30% and 50% of patients with chronic conditions fail to comply with their therapies. They don't do the exercises.
Yeah. Why?
Why?
Well, why? It could be psychological.
That's right. And they're saying the more information these patients are given, the more apt that they are to be moved and inspired to do the work.
It would help. I mean, I look at myself, well, why don't I exercise more? Why?
And you think if you had one of these virtual projectors that would help you somehow?
It might entertain me a little bit.
Maybe you could project your younger, thinner self on
the ultimate
skin
version of myself.
Exercise until you get close to it.
My early 30s, something like that, to train myself to go back to when things were that good. Okay, I'll be willing to try that.
I like that.
We've got three more minutes here for the first part of our Dr. Future show, Dr. Future. And I wanted to talk about the DIY lasers.
Ah, yes.
Because we are going to be talking with the DIY expert,
Sabrina.
Sabrina, in the next hour, who's helping organize the Maker Faire. So making your own DIY could be dangerous. Well, why?
Irresistibly dangerous.
Because you might, point it at somebody.
Yeah, I mean, even yourself.
Even yourself.
Look, you know, this is an archetype of power on a most primal level. The phaser laser weapon.
Lasers.
What boy hasn't dreamed of that? You know, It can be used for cutting things. It can be used for shooting things. It can be used for transmitting information. Maybe all of these things at once.
The laser beam, punching holes into plastic.
That's what I understand, is that a lot of very powerful DIY lasers are being used at concerts to pop balloons from a distance.
And what makes you not just want to pop the person next to you?
Control. Fun. You don't want to, you know that,
that'll be a buzz kill.
Hit
when
somebody.
That
yeah, well, everyone will have so many personal sensors in the future. If you do anything to damage someone else, everyone will know. So I think there'll be a natural tendency for us to protect ourselves along those lines, have a self-protection network system. But anyway, the balloons, I think we can get away with, and they can be very powerful experience because the balloon could contain like hydrogen gas, and they could make little explosions, things like that. And very, very Burning Man-esque, probably safe if the balloons are small enough kind of entertainment. So I see that that already is kind of popular at concerts, is popping balloons. But lasers, as you know, have a multitude of uses. I'm kind of curious, Agent Nada, what would you do with a laser?
I'm trying to think. You know, this is such a guy thing.
Really?
Like,
is that guy, huh?
Oh, I got this laser. I'm going to make a laser gun. Woo-hoo. Like, there's other options. I just have to think about it. But I could see, you know.
You can burn things. You can cut things apart. You could melt them together.
Pressing buttons, turning on and off the stove from a distance, like in the cooking process. Oh, you could use it to cook things, right? You could cook an egg. Could, I don't know, cook a potato.
Instant. One of the popular uses in Star Trek was to, like, if you were stuck in a cave somewhere outside, you would use it to heat up a rock so that it would create heat and keep you warm all night.
There you go. All right, Dr. Future.
I'm going to lend you my pocket
laser. It's the
laser
end of our first show. Please stay tuned
see if you
here.
Come up with any good ideas. Okay.
KSCO Santa Cruz.
Stay tuned for DIY Maker Faire.
As we return to What's Left, Dr. Future, hour number two on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Here with Agent Nada and Mrs. Future.
And
this hour we have a special guest on, Sabrina Merlot, who is representing the Maker Faire, working with the Maker Faire, I understand, has deep roots with, I think, the very first Maker Faires all the way to the present. Anyway, she'll tell you more about her involvement with this world. And what's interesting also is that she also collaborated with the Survival Research Labs.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Well, not a particularly like that. And I have very strong memories of some early SRL projects.
Yes,
projects.
Very scary memories of early Survival Research Labs.
And Burning Man memories.
I'm too young for any of those things.
Oh, okay.
Me too.
Just from the history books, huh?
No.
No, you were playing with them, weren't you?
A little bit of play. This is all about play.
Indeed.
Right? Okay.
Welcome to the show, Sabrina. Thank you so much for coming on. Sabrina Merlot.
Well, nice to be here. Thanks for having us. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Now you're working with a modern-day event called Maker Faire, right? It's the latest thing in your lineage of projects. Can you tell us a little bit about, to the uninitiated, what the Maker Faire is? And
sure. I mean, Maker Faire is a new incarnation of the old-fashioned science fair. It's kind of a combination of science and engineering, technology, art, homesteader, skills, all in a kind of a fun, explosive, super environment of booths and performances and demonstrations and learning moments. So it's just a modern fair in the old sense of the word.
Is it fair to say that the whole families go?
Absolutely, totally family friendly. It's actually one of the best family-friendly events out there.
Hmm.
I totally agree. I have gone there with the whole. There's something for everybody.
Yes, definitely. It's there. The range of subjects covered at Maker Faire. I was actually prepping for this talk, trying to look at the scope of Maker Faire so that I could help articulate it here, you know, and looking at the, it's almost so big at this point, and it would be hard to alienate anybody in the extended family if you brought them. Grandma could sit down and do finger knitting, or pickling.
On this show, for example, we talked about 3D printers.
Right.
Would you be able to see any of that kind of technology?
Well, definitely. There's, MakerBot, which is a recent outcropping of... There's actually quite a number of 3D printers.
Because we talked about MakerBot today. They're like one of the first affordable 3D printing.
$1,300.
Right, as opposed to what, $20K or $30K for some beginner industrial machine?
Yeah, great for professionals, but a little beyond the family budget.
Right. So, yeah. I think you're seeing the tools, right? Some of the stuff at Maker Faire now is you're seeing what is coming forth with these new tools for people to make things with.
Well, let's say there's the new contest from the XPRIZE Foundation for $10 million for the best ideas of a modern-day medical tricorder. Do you think you'd come away with ideas from the Maker Faire with that idea?
This year, there's a number of things related to NASA in terms of both DIY space exploration, but also there's a whole new Health 2.0 pavilion. So there's...
Health is a whole pavilion on health itself?
Yes. Yeah.
DIY health?
DIY health. App-enabled, technology-enabled health management and projects that people are doing in that realm.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we were just talking about a contest.
That's right, the $10 million XPRIZE contest. And so there you go. So you get all kinds of creative ideas there.
Right.
How about just iPhone apps or Android apps? Is there any focus on
that? There is some of that. Expo Hall, if you are, all of you who are listening, you might want to just play along with us here at MakerFaire.com. The event is down in San Mateo at the San Mateo County Fairgrounds, and it's a... multi-building indoor and outdoor exposition.
Yeah, rain or shine then.
Right, rain or shine, and there are themed areas. We don't want to break it out too much where art is completely isolated from, for example, robotics. We're talking about interdisciplinary approaches here, so things naturally get mixed up.
Right.
But
there are
whole sections on, for example, Arduino and whole sort of groupings around 3D printing and, apps in sort of one area. And a lot of that more tech stuff that you'll find in Expo Hall.
Mm-hmm. How about automobiles?
There are, depends on what you call an automobile. there are both sort of official sponsor mainstream manufacturer automobiles like the new Nissan Leaf, but then there's also alternative transportation vehicles like Bucephalus, an electric, a DIY, somebody made an electric old-fashioned buggy, or this guy who's an old, actually SRL alumnus, Dezure Molnar, he's bringing a flying motorcycle.
Flying motorcycle?
Yeah.
How cool is that?
So there are, there's a tremendous range. There's also a talk by Sebastian Thrun, who's, leader behind Google's self-driving car on the center stage. So,
would the Google self-driving car be there?
The car itself is not there, but don't miss Sebastian's talk because he's sort of the brains and leader behind it.
How about the Google Street View car?
I'm not sure if that's there.
I saw one just driving by.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. There's the fair is, like any huge event, a big public event or a giant street fair. There are this year more makers than there's ever been. I think we're well over 700 makers. Event is now up to beyond 70,000 attendees over the 2-day weekend.
It's packed.
It's a big impact experience.
Exactly. That is the other thing that I you know, I think we're mentioning is that it's a tremendous social event as well as a tech event or science or art event even. The people, you meet a lot of people there that are really amazing and creative people in our extended community.
Well, that's kind of where Maker Faire originated. I mean, the idea was from the founders of Make Magazine to produce an event where people could talk to each other.
Yeah.
Where you could have conversations in that old sort of science fair way, walk up to somebody's table and be able to ask them questions about their project. Mm-hmm. And that is still the fundamental part of what's going on at Maker Faire. What has happened is that, of course, this event has facilitated the connections in this community. And so people come every year not just to see what's new and different, but to see their friends. Yeah. And, you know, the Twitter stream is full of people making connections and people announcing their travel plans.
Oh, that's a good point. So what is your Twitter stream? What's the name?
Well, there's a few of them, but you can track everything under hashtag Maker Faire. Make has a Twitter stream and, you can look up, just visit MakerFaire.com for links to the Facebook page and YouTube channel and all of that.
It's all linked through your website too, I would imagine.
And Sabrina, this isn't the only place in the Bay Area that, we have ours here, the Maker Faire here for the Bay Area, but there's other Maker Faires.
There are. Well, it is a growing movement. Maker Faire itself produces the Bay Area Maker Faire, which is the world's largest. And then there's also a very large fair in Detroit and a very large fair in New York that that we are producing. There's also a movement of mini Maker Faires, a regional or city, a community. Sponsored, community-driven events, you know, and we have supported this Maker Faire. We're doing a workshop actually the Monday morning after Maker Faire on how to make a Maker Faire for folks from schools or from hackerspaces that are trying to organize in their community and have the notion to produce a mini Maker Faire.
As a matter of fact, didn't you write a paper along those lines yourself?
Well, I helped start the East Bay Mini Maker Faire in Oakland, California.
Okay, and so you have hands-on experience.
Yeah, I do.
DIY project. Interesting.
So out of that, Kauffman Foundation actually underwrote the production of a 100-page How to Make a Mini Maker Faire manual.
Yeah. So did you find doing this that there was a lot of creativity in smaller communities as well? It doesn't just have to be the Bay Area.
No, it doesn't. That's a metropolitan state of mind that it all exists, right? In these places like San Francisco or New York. No, it's everywhere. I mean, and that is maybe one of the reasons why Maker Faire has been so successful is that it taps into a culture of people making stuff in garages or in basements or in their backyards. They really didn't have a venue before.
Yeah.
They're not going to be in an art museum. They may not be, you know, young enough or crazy enough to go to Burning Man or live anywhere near it. Mm-hmm. You know, they might be too straight for the county fair or too technical for the county fair.
This kind of is convenient and can be in your own neighborhood, I guess, ultimately, with its decentralized model that you're espousing.
Right.
So
it is they're coming at us from everywhere. Right. And it's really exciting to watch it grow around the world.
Are you helping the small regionals develop their fairs?
Well, they're doing the workshop on May 23rd.
On May 23rd, okay.
And then we have a Google group, a producers group, and we've, you know, the playbook is designed for to try to help folks with both kind of the cultural. I mean, it's a two-pronged approach, right? It's not just an event production. That is definitely a standard. You have to be able to put on an event.
Yeah.
But you're also, it really more importantly, it's about building this community and connecting with this culture. And also expressing the diversity in that range of culture. So you want a beekeeper there as much as you want, you know, an electronics, robotics expert. I mean,
You're talking about all aspects of community.
Right.
Here, from
but food. It's a community of people who are devoted, who are driven by kind of a desire and a need and a curiosity for just being like a lifelong learner. Uh-huh. You know, when people who are always asking questions and who maybe, you know, have for some reason been able to or be willing to sort of take that risk of actually trying something. And it might not work.
And get some feedback from people around you who are interested. In,
right, right. That's... Maker Faire has also branched out into the world of young makers, you know, where trying to figure out how to – kids are so engaged when they go to Maker Faire. If you have, ten-year-old man. It's 10-year-old heaven. My daughter has gotten sort of grown up with it and is now involved with one of the Young Maker programs. It's essentially a club, and these clubs are sort of sprouting around the Bay Area where kids are matched with makers either individually or in groups. And they build a project that basically they is designed to finish in time to show at Maker Faire.
So that's interesting. So if you had something to show, can you rent a booth like a trade fair?
It does not cost anything to participate at Maker Faire unless you are a commercial vendor and you have a product you want to sell.
So it pays for through the admission fees?
Right. Oh, right.
Interesting.
Right.
Huh.
And then of course you can end up in Make Magazine or on right. online in many of the videos that there's just tremendous amounts of content coming out of these fairs and showing all these great projects and amazing people.
Yeah, I have the link that you sent us that has your daughter showing as the poster child for the Young Makers Program. And beneath that is this very extensive list of just some of the amazing things that these kids are doing. This is the Kids Maker Faire. They've got an LED guitar. They've got a kinetic horse.
They got a hovercraft.
Hovercraft. A no-touch garden.
Is there a hoverboard?
A marshmallow cannon.
Right.
What child wouldn't dream of a marshmallow cannon?
Yeah.
And, of course, this would be Dr. Future's favorite rambunctious combat robots.
Right. Yep.
Sabrina, it's interesting to talk about also that your daughter is holding a
plasma
welding.
Cutter.
Oh, a plasma cutter.
Well, what can you do with that?
Oh, plasma cutters are so fun.
Be careful.
It was her first time using a plasma cutter, and she was, she was just doing some stuff like cutting stars out of it. They were actually just using it to cut some pieces for this water totter that her group built.
Are you talking cutting metal?
Cutting metal. Sorry, sheet metal. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's dramatic. You see this 10-year-old girl holding something that's blasting a hole through sheet metal. But it's fabulous.
Sparks are flying.
And I guess you can get into the design on the computer and then see it in 3D and in sheet metal.
Right.
After in a very short order.
Right.
God, can you imagine growing up with that kind of technology?
I think it is a new landscape, and that's probably another reason why Maker Faire has so much momentum, is that not only do all of us have so much technology and are somewhat enamored by it and find it a very useful tool, but then, you know, it's the tools for interacting with the technology are getting better. I mean, you mentioned the 3D printer thing, how cheap and affordable that's becoming. And then there's tools like Arduino that makes, you know, very simple entry-level robotics projects, you know, affordable and sort of easy to figure out how to do or comparatively.
And they're the foundation of any type of interactive project you're creating.
What about,
huge.
Yeah, what about like feminine interests, like fashion?
Oh, well, one of the cornerstones of Maker Faire is the Bazaar Bazaar, which is...
Bazaar Bazaar.
it's a, you know, a wonderful showcase of craft people doing really, you know, selling really amazing stuff. And then there's also the Swap-A-Rama-Rama, which is the huge clothe hack area. So you can... there's mounds of clothes, and you can pull them apart, and there's workstations everywhere where you can sew, you can glue gun, you can screen print. I mean, sometimes people don't come out of there. They go in there, and they're in there for 8 hours.
That's all they see of Maker Faire.
Yeah. There's the whole kind of urban homesteading area and food maker area, which, you know, sort of more the domestic arts in terms of food and household, you know, maker skills. But, you know, the female contingent is also doing a lot of the electronic stuff as well, and robotics competitions, and the ladies are out there at Maker Faire.
So robots, they're no strangers to robots these days, huh?
I still think, you know, some of this stuff has a lot more men, but it's Maker Faire is great. It's a really wonderful, democratic platform for learning and understanding.
And what does it cost to go?
Right now, tickets, I believe, are $10 for kids and $25 for adults.
For the day, right?
For the day.
And this is May 21st and 22nd.
San Mateo County Fairgrounds.
And we got to go for a break.
So thank you, Sabrina.
Thank
Appreciate
you for having me. Appreciate
You're
it.
Welcome.
Great.
All right. Have a
Bye-bye.
Good day.
The Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency invites you to attend an informational meeting to help shape the future of water management in the productive Pajaro Valley. The agency has set a series of open meetings and forums to gather public input and guidance as it seeks to make changes in original enabling legislation. These changes will help modernize the way the agency serves its customers and help it better manage water resources in the Pajaro Valley. The first meeting is Wednesday, May 18th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. in the Watsonville City Council Chambers. The meeting is informational and will outline the reasons the legislative changes will be sought and how public input will be used in the process. Information on the May 18th meeting is available online at pvwater.org or by calling 831-722-9292. Again, information on this meeting is available by calling 831-722-9292 or online at pvwater.org.
Ring in Memorial Day weekend with style.
Come fly with me. Let's fly, fly.
At the third annual Come Fly With Me Spring Gala benefiting Children's Hospice and Palliative Care Coalition. Margaritas, dancing, music, and a live auction all come together for a glorious evening of fun and fashion on Saturday, May 28th at the Seascape Resort in Aptos. For tickets, call 831-763-3070 or visit childrenshospice.org.
Who knows what evil lurks in our walls? JM Electric knows.
Hello, I'm Tino from JM Electric. Join Charlie Friedman and the experts of electricity from JM Electric in Salinas for home safety tips every Wednesday on KSEO. Electrical evils cause about 68,000 home fires every year, but with a little common sense, you can sleep well at night knowing your home is safe. So join Charlie and JM Electric Wednesday and learn how to take care of your home so your home will take good care of you.
Hear JM Electric safety tips at 5:15 p.m. Wednesdays on KSEO.
Well, it's almost here, the 2012 presidential race, a time when all the pundits get spun up and start ripping into the candidates. But folks, does all that finger-pointing really get us any closer to solving our problems? I'm Rebecca Costa, the host of the Costa Report, 2 p.m. every Friday, right here on KSCO. Join me each week for an unbiased, thoughtful look at the issues. No rageaholics, no opinionators, no Jerry Springer radio. We interview today's top thought leaders and try to get to the bottom of what's really going on. Tune into the Costa Report, 2 p.m. every Friday on KSCO.
This segment brought to you by User-Friendly Computing for all your computer service needs. Give them a call today at 423-9653 or stop on by the shop at 505 River Street in Santa Cruz. And be sure to ask Peter for your free $50 diagnostic coupon.
Well, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We have Dr. Future visiting the past for just a moment, but
Sabrina,
I think
was great, wasn't she?
Oh, she was awesome.
Yeah, she really got captured some of the excitement of the Maker Faire. I just loved touring around the Maker Faire. It's just anything there was just amazing to look at more closely.
And all the information is at makerfaire.com. And that's fair with an E, makerfaire.com.
Yeah.
And again, the event is happening this weekend, the 21st and 22nd.
First time I saw an autonomous vehicle was there. You know, one of the cars that just drive around and with no human driver.
It's a place for first time a lot of things. And I saw a lot of things for the first time.
Yeah, it really opens your eyes to what is.
Unique and brilliant things.
Yeah. I mean, America is really innovation land here. We really are an innovative bunch, and you can really see it in action.
And there's something for everyone. There really is. There's something for the little kids all the way up. When we were there, they had, remember it was the giant... You know that game, the mousetrap game, where you put together pieces?
Rubik's Cube.
No, the mousetrap game. Where you build pieces together and you make a ball fall down.
Yeah, don't they call that a Rube's Goldberg device?
No, she's talking about the actual mousetrap game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they had a giant, it was the biggest mousetrap game in the world. Do you remember that?
And they used a Rube Goldberg type ideas.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So there was that. That was for the kids, and then they had...
They had that at Burning Man 1 year.
Yeah, I think there's a big cross-pollination
between there are many different communities that cross-pollinate at the Maker Faire.
And just like we're talking about the research survival lab, research lab, they were having such huge events in San Francisco that they weren't able to get permits anymore to do their art performance and actually sowed the seeds for...
They were pretty radical. They were making statements with their technology
as
well.
And now we have Burning Man.
That's when they had robots battling each other, and they would like put sides of beef on the robots as they fought each other.
Oh, the one I remember
warehouses
is where
San Francisco.
The flamethrowers. They would get involved in demolition, and they would completely demolish the space that they were in, and sometimes the audience would be in a little bit of danger because they would have, you know, like two battling robots that would be like a flamethrower versus like a wrecking ball, you know?
Yeah, didn't you have to sign waivers when you came there that you were coming there at your own risk?
Yes.
Physical risk.
Yes. Extra large chainsaws.
Right, and one of the founders of the Survival Research Lab will be talking at Maker Faire this weekend.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that Sabrina mentioned that Maker Faires are becoming regional.
Yeah, mini Maker Faires.
Yeah, showing that there are amazing ideas coming from all over the place.
Yeah, they're happening. There's one going to be happening in June in Ann Arbor. There's going to be one in North Carolina also in June. Let's see, where are other places? Kansas City, Vancouver. These mini Maker Faires are happening everywhere. And
so
they'll just keep getting bigger and bigger.
So we'll be there on Sunday.
Yes.
We'll be wandering around.
Checking out the coolest.
Yeah.
That's right. Standing room only, I'm sure.
We'll be collecting a few interviews. You meet some interesting makers. We'll share them with you next week.
It is. It's amazing that the Santa Clara Fairgrounds are in a way getting too small.
San Mateo.
Oh, they were.
San Mateo.
They were. I think it needs to be bigger. Personally, and last longer. There should be more sustainability to that, but that's another story. I mean, I'd like to, it turns into the tech shop idea with every neighborhood having these tools available for themselves and their kids, like the library.
Like San Mateo Tech Shop,
yeah.
Which they have at the Maker Faire. You get to see a mini tech shop.
Yeah, it's kind of a do-it-yourself university. Anyway, I wanted to just cover another topic that happened this week. It's very different than the normal tone of our show. And I just want to, you know, we're so open source and sharing of information here in the Bay Area that it's hard to imagine almost anything else.
But, are you talking about Gaddafi's entry to the
Maker
Faire?
Oh, no, I wasn't. But we could mention that really briefly before I mention what I was talking about. We did mention to Corey Gold at the very beginning of our show, the end of his, that I would mention something about Gaddafi's new weapon. And now imagine this. Imagine filling an inflatable boat with explosives, and then you crew it with mannequins, and then you send it out to sea in search of a humanitarian aid ship to destroy. Hence the latest ingenuity.
So describe this a little bit for our dear audience that doesn't have a picture in front of them. What does it look like?
Well, basically, I'll give you the scene here. There are NATO ships that are enforcing the maritime embargo on Libya. And then recently, the NATO ships noticed a curiosity where near the town of Misurata, where a lot of misery has been going on. It's one of the battle towns between Tripoli and the rebel territory. And anyway, what they saw were two rigid hull inflatable boats that appeared to be heading into the Misurata port. So the NATO warships and choppers, you know, took a close note of this. And then as they were looking, one of the boats turned and broke away, and the other one kept going right towards the port. And what was on board? Well, about a ton of explosives, according to a NATO press release, and two human mannequins. But before it hit the port, NATO blew up the boat with small arms fire. So that's the secret weapon of Gaddafi, a inflatable boat.
There you go.
Floating bombs with, filled with dummies.
With dummies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Anyway, that the other story that's of concern was a big New Yorker story that came out for the next issue, the May 23rd issue, an article called A Secret Sharer. It's about whether or not an ex-employee of the NSA, Thomas Drake, is an enemy of the state or not.
Yes.
You know, it's an interesting story. It really, the New Yorker article is quite long, and it gets deeply into the whole sort of the inner politics of NSA and their relationship with themselves, really, and how they've changed and how they've had to adapt to the new world after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Because basically, we had assembled the largest intelligence network on the planet to really look at a labyrinthian enemy, the Russians, you know, to really look at a whole country of millions and millions of people and to analyze their whereabouts and their data and what was important and that sort of thing. And then when they collapsed, the NSA was kind of casting about for a new identity for a while. And the 90s were particularly tough for that. Then 9/11 came along and sort of helped define a new mission towards anti-terrorism. And this article is really about this transition and about how they had embraced a technology for monitoring everyone that was costing billions and billions and billions of dollars, and how lots of high-level officials in the NSA and their associated boys' clubs, the industry that was creating surveillance technology, were feathering their nests quite nicely. And this was... not actually producing any type of really, really decent technology that worked. You know, it was just a way of people making money. So there were some whistleblowers that were on this issue and, you know, about how we were wasting intelligence dollars. And they not only pointed out that lots of people are making money from this, but that the NSA also started to spy on Americans. And that was the really scary part for many, because this is supposed to be using surveillance techniques for others, not us, not for the people that we were defending. You know, not. It's almost like, from a medical perspective, like an autoimmune disease. Here we have our intelligence society, or which it is, it's an intelligence society, supposed to be looking out for us. It's looking at us instead. You know, what's wrong with this movie? And so some whistleblowers were on the case for that transition in the NSA, and they got in trouble. You know, of course, NSA officials who are in charge have tremendous influence on Congress and the judicial departments, and they pulled strings and got these whistleblowers in trouble. And this article is all about the trouble that they're facing, which is very significant, because the high-level intelligence operators in this country control a lot of the military and a lot of the police. And if you're on the stinging end of this, it feels like you're in a police state. It's a very revealing article.
Yeah, we would highly recommend that everybody check out this The Secret Sharer, mm-hmm, by Jane Meyer, asking the question, is Thomas Drake an enemy of the state? And it's a very articulate and thorough exploration of a lot of the abusive excesses of the people in charge of secrets in our government, and how they are just flagrantly using their authority in ways that very much undermine our Constitution and our American values of freedom of speech and freedom of the press, and how they use their power of surveillance to actually set people up that do not deserve to be set up. And no one gets in not trouble except the whistleblowers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also, It's also, it shows you how impotent Obama is in changing these things, even if he wanted to. It seems like the a lot of the policies that were put in place long before Obama came along, and they continue to be implemented despite him. As a matter of fact, whistleblowers are being hit more and even more now than they were in the Bush administration.
Well, this specific case with Thomas Drake is something that came from the Bush administration. It's a court case that's been going on that was there when Obama took
over. And Drake was hoping that things would get a little easier.
With Obama's Justice Department.
Yeah, and it turns out just the opposite.
And it turns out like Obama is actually worse than Nixon. He's actually going after the congressional oversight person who was collecting information from the NSA about their abuses and was alerting the Pentagon and was alerting various branches of the administration about how the NSA tools were being used illegally to spy on Americans. And instead of listening to the person in Congress in charge of oversight, she just ran into all kinds of deaf ears that did not want to hear it. And they are now continuing to prosecute Thomas Drake, who
was a whistleblower.
Was a whistleblower who was very careful
not to put out state secrets.
Not to put out any information that violated his security contract. And he's not really getting a fair shake.
That's the main defense.
Yeah, and they're trying to get him on some minor secrets they found lying around his house that had nothing to do with the case.
Right, so the main defense is that, well, what Obama is saying is that he will not allow anything that could compromise our troops abroad, and that is the reason why they're in all of these court cases.
Well, I would say, if anything, that is Obama's after the crime rationale, that for some reason he has swallowed the poison, because he can no longer defend his constitutional understanding by allowing the NSA to get away with it. And so he is really divided, and you can see it in his inability to defend with conviction. You know, that he says, oh, yes, we're going to defend the Constitution, except when it comes to, somebody in the government releasing secrets. And, they don't really clearly identify who those people are. But if you look at this article in The Secret Sharer, you can see that Thomas Drake really is being set up to take the fall. And he does not really appear to be guilty of anything.
Yes. And what's interesting is that there is also it comes out because there were a battle within SA between two different technologies, the people behind Project Thin Thread and the project behind Trailblazer, both security surveillance networks.
So more after the break.
And if anyone would like to join our conversation, please give us a call here at 479-1080. We're back. Dr. Future Show.
Another interesting breakthrough this week was a new kind of money.
Oh.
Have you heard about that?
A new kind of money.
Yeah. They're from all places. Visa, surprisingly enough.
Surprise, surprise.
Can you believe that?
They're making money? What are they doing, Dr. Future?
Does Visa make money? Well, that's debatable.
They make money off of us.
Yeah. Well, they do make money. I think they've been a very successful company. And they actually were a Bay Area company. Do you know that? And that the founder of Visa lives up here in the Santa Cruz Mountains?
No.
Yeah.
We got the coolest people up here.
Yeah. The whole story revolves around the idea of electronic point of sale, mobile payments. The idea that you can just wave your digital wallet or your cell phone in front of a scanner, and that's all you have to do to pay for something.
And binga, banga, boom, they take your money.
That's it. No more credit cards, just your cell phone.
I'm looking forward to the binga, banga, boom, and they put the money in your account.
You mean making money? What a concept.
That ain't going to happen.
Whoever thinks of that's going to lose a fortune.
So this is a really interesting thing. So it looks like a little phone.
Yeah.
It's a little device, mm-hmm. and it's the Visa digital wallet, and it helps you do just mobile payments.
Yep. Yeah, they're looking at how to make it easier to pay for things. Just wave your hands or wave your phone.
Their phone near the cash register.
Exactly. Yes.
Gotta be careful with that, though.
Yeah, I guess you do. I keep on thinking of the eye scanner here. And, you know, I mean, hey, you know, if you have a personal account, it seems like ultimately it will just go right into your eye scan.
Just blink at the sensor.
Well, apparently, in addition to the point-of-sale payment system, this new Visa system is supposed to be a one-click web shopping. I guess they really like that Amazon.com model, as well as an open platform for consolidating accounts from lots of different institutions. So I guess that means your banks and that sort of thing will all be accessible this way. Anyway, they call it enabling commerce, and that's an overarching trend is in enabling commerce is this continued adoption of electronic money, you know, easier and easier ways to transfer money.
They say that Google is planning to begin their own testing of a mobile payment system within the next few minutes. So naturally Google.
Within the next few minutes?
Next few months.
So naturally Google
will be in on that.
So what do you think of this migrating away from cash?
Well, I think we've been migrating away from cash.
Yeah, well, I think that it's the smart card revolution that ultimately the future of commerce, until we dispense with it altogether through automation, is to have individuals with, everybody accounts for everything through an electronic credit card system or electronic payment system. And, you know, if you really get paranoid, you could say that they're going to prevent people from using any other kind of money so that everybody will have to have their ID chip to participate in the economy. But I think that's sci-fi. Well, I don't believe that's really enforceable because human beings are the source of the economy.
Yeah, well, that's a whole topic. But do you think that the elimination of cash is inevitable? You think doesn't that mean everything we do is trackable at that point?
Yeah, I think that the elimination of cash is definitely the goal.
And it has to do with trackability and being able to profit from you in some way.
Well, I think it may actually have to do with the desire to avoid Confederate currencies. You know, the idea that the central bank wants to be the only person who can issue money, because then they will have all of the benefits of banking. Whereas any time any other group issues their own currency, even if it just makes common sense,
it dilutes the control.
It's out of the control of that entity.
Yeah. So it's a decentralized control versus central control.
As usual. Isn't it always?
Yeah, it seems like both are going in place. The centralized control system and the decentralized are both evolving quite extensively. I mean, the whole idea of online barter systems has really taken off lately as well. So that combined with better Visa systems shows you that both are part of the future, not just one or the other, from what I can see.
I have to agree.
Yeah. So that's interesting, the whole idea of money going away from cash in the very near future. Anybody take issue with that? Give us a call.
Well, I know when I worked with Bart, when we were doing the station extensions back in the early 90s, there was a lot of talk about using the a smart card where you don't even have to wave it. You just have it in your wallet, and it would automatically be there would be some sensor that would realize that you were there going through onto the train, and then it would automatically deduct from your smart card that has, you know, whatever amount of BART money you have.
Yeah, I remember the old BART tickets. Yeah,
I knew
a hacker that got in trouble for his BART tickets, but that's another story. Oh, I want to mention also that there is an evolution happening in the music world too. That Google Music was launched last week without label deals, which is kind of interesting. They're a bit frustrated, though. They were proceeding with a digital music service without securing licensing agreements with record labels or music publishers.
Google?
Yeah, it's called Music Beta. It's Google's free service, and it would let users upload their personal music libraries to Google's computers so that they can stream their songs from any web browser or internet-connected cell phone running Google's Android operating system from your mobile computer.
So it's putting your own little music collection in the cloud mm-hmm. so you can stream your own music, and it just yes. breaks all the rules because you do own the music and you get to play it as often as you want from the internet.
Well, what if you share your music collection with your friends? What happens then? Ask the music companies.
Well, that is the tricky
part,
isn't it?
Do they get paid for that?
What if any of your friends listens to your copy of the music in the cloud? It's just crazy. It's just, it doesn't make sense. We have an archaic system here.
Well, this isn't available yet to the public. It's currently by invitation only. And they announced it at the Google Developers Conference last week in San Francisco. And if you're interested, you can sign up for it. We have a link on our page if you want to be part of this visionary approach to music sharing. So anyway, Google's been interested in this for a while.
They're really talking a lot about cloud, mm-hmm. you know, having the cloud-based data sets. Another article that you shared with us, Dr. Future, that's Google and cloud-based data sets, is their, what are they calling it, Autopia.
Autopia?
As opposed to Wikipedia.
Autopedia.
Autopia is what they're calling it. And it's to make smarter cars. And so they're using the Google cloud data set for cars to tap into. So the idea is you get in your car in the morning and the car asks you, good morning, are you going to work? And you, owner of the car, says, yes, I'm going to work. And then the car automatically goes up to the cloud and finds out your route and how the traffic is on your route. And maybe mm-hmm. what would be a better alternative route because your route might be full of traffic.
Or stop at your favorite coffee shops along the way.
That's right.
Knows
That's
your
right.
preference set.
And what I think is interesting about this article is that, yeah, Google is doing their thing and yeehaw for Google, but they have partnered up with a pretty big standard traditional automobile company, Ford. So they're partnering with Ford, which I think is huge.
And Ford wants to find new ways to sell cars.
And they will make their cars enabled to get this data from the cloud. So they'll be coming fully loaded with Google Chrome, I guess, and ready to follow, analyze your driving and where you're driving and how you're driving, and then figure out the best routes mm-hmm. and the best ways for you so that you have what they're calling power optimization, and it improves your energy efficiency and use.
I would imagine also they would tie it into to Google's other services, like choosing what radio stations you want to listen to on the way, what headlines it could read to you. Probably even, I would imagine that Google Voice would play a role in this once Chrome is in your car.
Right. So they're calling it Google Prediction Engine. And it's it allows your car to be tracked so they could learn and effectively learn our behavior and adapt to it.
Yeah. Now, do you think your family would use that?
Well, because my husband travels over the hill every morning to Santa Clara, I would see that being really important for anybody who does that.
I mean, just to have the your preference, you don't have to think about them anymore, so you don't have to pull off.
No, I was talking about just getting the most efficiency out of your commute, and so your ability to know the best way to get there.
Given the traffic situation.
Going around the traffic. Like uh-huh. I would assume that this would also branch into the ability to find other Google consumers or Google users who are taking the exact same trip that you're taking. Mm-hmm. And so why not put those people together? What if you found somebody, let's say you have a commute to San Jose every day, mm-hmm. and you found somebody who, after being involved in this program with the Google, what are they calling it, prediction engine, they find somebody who has the same hours that you have, the same maybe behaviors and
daily regimes. Yeah, that's practical social networking.
That's right. And they say,
you get to talk to people and get somewhere at the same time.
They say, here's somebody who does your same exact traffic commute at the same times. Why don't you go together? How much more efficient is that? Although maybe it's somebody you don't really want to talk to.
There's always that. But then there should be an easy way to change partners.
And then you start getting choice. Into databases of interests. What kind of music do these people listen to? If their music is up in the cloud.
Right.
So how easy would it be just to figure out that filter?
Or you could take turns entertaining each other with your clouds, your cloud entertainment with the other commuters. You know, when you run out of things to talk about, you might want to share your favorite YouTube movie from last night or what your kid found that you think they'd be interested in.
And I would assume with these Ford, they're going to put this in the, what do they call it, Ford Sync.
Yeah, the Sync, the Ford Sync, that's right. That's the built-in voice controlled computer in all Ford cars that have it.
Right. And so I would assume there'd be some kind of screen or some kind of voice control where you could say, hey, you know, show us the – or you don't want to show us. I guess you want to listen to what was that show that we listened to last night or podcast.
That funny South Park episode that made fun of iPads. Yeah. Well, that is interesting, especially for commuters. If we still have commuting in the future, you know, it would make sense. Well, thank you, Angelina. That's very interesting. The Ford Google team up to make us smarter cars. Maybe we'll see one at the Maker Faire.
I want to see the driverless cars. I want to see that, and I want to see the 3D printer in person.
I guess we're going to try to do that then.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, we're almost out of time here, but just a couple more ideas came in. There was a really interesting public release of a book called Brain Connectivity that just came out. Brain Connectivity, and it's intrinsic brain activity that's going on, and sort of what is going on with our brains, and all the information that's happening in terms of reading it from through electromagnetics and scanners and that sort of thing. And we're finding that a lot of brain activity is not task-related at all. As a matter, the majority of energy used by the brain is not task-related. That is a surprising finding, because what we're doing is not really taking up most of our brain energy. What we're doing is relatively minimal compared to what the brain is doing, which we don't really fully understand.
It's all about what are we conscious of and what are we unconscious of. And
it's a work in progress. But this study that we've put up includes findings leading to spatial temporal patterns, relationship between spontaneous activity and our consciousness, how awake we are, who we're talking to, things like that. Anyway, Brain Connectivity, check it out. It's on our website. Thanks for tuning into the Dr. Future Show. See y'all next week.
Yeah.
We're at the Maker Faire this weekend in San Mateo.
We'll be there Sunday.
Hey, thanks for listening. You've been listening to KSCO Santa Cruz.